The views and opinions expressed by individuals on the following program do not necessarily reflect those of the network, Guys Guy Radio, and its platforms.
It's Guys Guy Radio. Here's your host, Robert Manny.
Welcome to Guys Guys Radio. This is your host, Robert Manny, welcoming you to the show where men and women can be at their best and everyone wins. Guys Guys Radio. We're here to inform you, inspire you, empower you, and get you to think, feel, and who knows, maybe even act by virtue of the journeys, stories, experiences, and insights of the guests I bring you each and every week to the show. And as I always say, this week is no exception. Today, we're going to talk about the television business, how to break into it, and what it's like. My special guest, his name is Shelley Herman, wrote the book, My Peacock Tale, Secrets of an NBC Page. And it's all about her experience as a page on the NBC network and how she built a career from there. Because when you become a page, you usually have an 18-month arc to make something of yourself and get beyond that, or decide to leave the business, whatever. But Shelley made herself into a big success. The name of the book, again, is My Peacock Tale, Secrets of an NBC Page. Really interesting story, great anecdotes, lots of celebrity name dropping in a really good way, because Shelley has the experience of working with some of the really top talents in the TV business, and she's a wonderful person also. So I'm thrilled to welcome Shelley Herman to Guys Guys Radio today. Hope everybody's doing well. We're entering summer here in Southern California, and it's finally sunny in the mornings. I live kind of near the coast, so I'm blessed by that. But a lot of times they call it May gray and June gloom here in the kind of North County, San Diego area, because near the ocean you get the marine layer. So sometimes it's raining in the morning, and by noon it's sunny, and the further we get into the year, the sun comes out a little bit earlier. But it's been a long, long wintry time here, and I'm an East Coast guy, and I'm still kind of getting my sea legs, if you will, about what the weather's like here in San Diego, but no complaints, because it's always temperate, but you just never know. This morning I got up, it was raining by noon, as I mentioned, sunny. You never know what to wear. It's cool, and then it's hot, and there's a breeze, but the ocean is beautiful now, and my son is off from school, and we've got a lot of big plans for the summer, and I've got a lot of great guests for you on Guys Guys Radio. And I think one of the big businesses out here in Southern California, obviously, is the entertainment business. So I always welcome guests from that field to be on the show and also provide some tips for our audience as to, if you want to enter the business, what are some of the good ideas you need to have and what are some of the personal characteristics and capabilities that are required for to make a go of it. And my special guest, Shelley Herman, has got them all in spades. She's an Emmy-nominated writer. She began once again as a page in Burbank, California for NBC, and she worked her way up as a page to get working with Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show back in the day, and also from there kind of catapulted herself into being a very prolific writer and just knows the ins and outs of the business. And I think you're really going to like our conversation with Shelley here on Guys Guys Radio today. So if you're interested in the TV business and you're interested in some fun stories with some well-known guest names that Shelley worked with, celebrities that you're very familiar with, that you may not have known some of these details about, I think you're going to enjoy our conversation. So my special guest on Guys Guys Radio is writer Shelley Herman.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
It's Guys Guy Radio.
Okay, Guys Guys Radio, it's the interview portion of our show today, and today we're going to talk about being a page for a major network, and we're going to talk about career paths in the television business. It's going to be a fascinating show. My special guest, his name is Shelly Herman. She's an Emmy-nominated writer whose career began as an NBC page in Burbank, California. She's got a book. It's called My Peacock Tale, Secrets of an NBC Page. It's a fascinating tome about some wild times back in the 80s and the 70s, a little bit in the 80s and 90s, and her wonderful experiences and crazy experiences working with stars like Johnny Carson and Freddie Prinze and Gary Shandling and also, and just a number of top executives in the TV business. And I learned a lot from the book. Shelly has also been a prolific writer. She starred in TV series Off the Wall, Night Rap, co-hosted ESPN's Battle of the Monster Trucks and Mudbog Spectacular. She's guest starred on many TV shows. She's a member of SAG and AFTRA, the Writers Guild of America. She lives in LA. She's written over 1,000 hours of TV and contributed to numerous books for Dove and Phoenix Books. And she's just an all-around talent and expert in the television field, and just a really wonderful person. I can tell from a book. I just met her now, and it's such a pleasure. Welcome to Guys Guys Radio, Shelly Herman.
It sounds like what she is she's exhausted after that introduction. Thank you.
Well, listen, let's start right at the beginning. So people are going to be curious about this. How did you get your start at NBC, and what exactly is a page?
Well, we'll first start off with what is a page and dovetail into how I got started. I lived in a small town, which is now a big town. I lived out in Calabasas when it was still a two-lane highway to get out there. And I was fortunate that a bunch of us high schoolers would pile in the car and drive down to NBC Burbank to watch the taping of the Midnight Special or the Tonight Show. And I would see these people standing around wearing uniforms, doing nothing. And I thought, I can do that. So I started inquiring what it was to be a page at NBC and what the requirements are. It's really tough. When I got there, the only thing you needed to have to qualify was to be at least to have a Bachelor of Science degree or Bachelor of Arts degree from college and be 21 years of age. I kind of snuck in the back door that way. And a lot of my career has always been not breaking the rules, but bending them a little bit. And that's how I got in. I didn't know anybody in showbiz. The whole thing came about in just the most bizarre, wonderful way that started on a girl's trip going to Vegas to see Elvis. And there were five of us girls. We all worked at Sears in the Junior Bazaar clothing department. And the three other girls took off to go meet boys. And I was stuck with the girl who was kind of the wallflower of the group. And she's the one who arranged the tickets for us. And I felt badly that nobody was talking to her. So we went to the cafeteria at the Hilton International and had cherry pie and ice cream. And I talked to her, and she told me her dreams, and I told her mine, and it turned out her mother's best friend worked at NBC.
There you
go. I had a name, I had a way in the door, and I fooled them and they hired me.
And then you started wearing the polyester suit that they gave you, right?
Oh my gosh, yes. And you can see it back there on the, that's it. I stole it when I left. Yes, it's the very one that's on the cover of my Peacock Tale, yes.
So that's amazing. Tell us a little bit about some of the inside info and terms used by the pages, like the DF, the OIC, the CBs. You had your own little code language for how to wrangle these stars and also the crowds that came to visit the studio.
What would be, because the two primary pages' responsibilities were to give tours of the NBC Burbank facility, and they still do that in New York. At 30 Rock. They don't have the tours in Los Angeles anymore because NBC was purchased by Universal, and Universal has their own tour system there, and it's a union. It's a whole separate thing. So the pages here in LA don't give tours anymore. But both coasts, they still would occasionally usher shows. Again, they have audience service people that do that. What we would do when we were working in Burbank is our secret codes for things were OIC, which was the person that was outside in charge. And if you saw a person with a clipboard, that was the person to get to. And they kind of regulated the VIP line, the tourist line, the get my girlfriend in line. But there was one particular code that we had that was called DF. And that was down front. And when I tell you this, I think you're going to go, oh, that's what. When we did certain TV shows like The Tonight Show, Johnny Carson liked to have young, happy, enthusiastic people that would sit in the first few rows because they would give him better feedback when he was doing his comedy. That has since gone on. And if you remember when Jay Leno hosted The Tonight Show, he would walk out and he'd slap hands and clap hands and kiss babies when he came out too, that just to get that same kind of energy going. And then there was a third term that was CBs, which was an arcane term that was the client booth. And that was the pages who worked inside that would take care of the managers and agents of people that would come see the TV shows. And three very different types of terms, but all very secretive at the time.
How did you learn, Shelley, how to wrangle stars? I come from, as we discussed, the advertising business, and we did a lot of shoots with stars, and everybody's different. We had Bill Cosby when I was at Young and Rubicam, who for Jell-O Pudding for many years, and I wasn't on that account, but I heard some stories. Yeah. And I worked with some other stars who were actually pretty cool. So I found that people are people, and there's going to be stars who are nice to deal with, and there's going to be stars who are very difficult. And we even had in the ad business, some of the top creators were, they were just not nice people. And even though they were very talented, and you had others who were super talented and super nice. How did you learn to identify who was who and kind of manage the star mindset?
I think that the celebrities that were there and their handlers knew that we as the pages were there to protect them. We were the NBC ambassadors, and it was our job to make the talent comfortable. And if the manager or agent couldn't get the job done, then it was up to we pages to do that. I don't ever remember having a bad incident with anyone. In the book, I say how a few of the pages had some difficulty with Mr. Cosby. I was not there for that. So much so that at one point, our leader, a woman named Eba Hawkins, wouldn't assign any women to work on shows that Mr. Cosby worked on. And then it got to the point that when The Tonight Show would send their staff down to help Mr. Cosby before the show, they wouldn't send any women. And eventually, they didn't send anybody because it got to be too uncomfortable a situation. Mm-hmm.
Did you find that sometimes the stars looked at the pages as just props, if you will, something that they could take advantage of? I mean, you were a pretty young lady. You had, and I mentioned, I called him Gary Shandelson before for some reason. McLean Stevenson, I meant, forgive me. And it sounds like he chased you around a little bit.
It was a different environment back then. And there was one executive who had said to me, you know, if you fool around with me, I'll give you the job. And I was so indignant about it because he was dating a friend of mine. And I was more upset about that. And I went back to the girl and told her. And I thought she would march into his office and tell him off. And instead, she never spoke to me again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so much for the girl code that way. But with McLean, I actually had a friendship with him going. Mm-hmm. It's detailed in the book. And I know it sounds really bizarre, and it was bizarre, and it was funny. But I actually thought that I was doing what I was supposed to do as a page at NBC. I was watching him tape his show. I was observing what I wanted to be a writer. And I thought, this is how you go about doing it. And then when I was called to his office as a page, as my job, And he pushed the little button under his desk and the door closed. I just started laughing because I'm 5 foot nothing. I'm not like Farrah Fawcett. I'm not a trophy girl that way. And the fact that somebody was hitting on me, it made me laugh at first. And then it got kind of serious. And then I was able to get out of it. But I would say 99% of the other pages and I all have very positive experiences.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Guys, Guys Radio, my special guest is Shelley Herman, the name of the book, My Peacock Tale, Secrets of an MBC Page. It's an amazing tome. It's got so many fun stories with a lot of names you're familiar with. You know, as mentioned, I come from the advertising industry, and there's so many parallels between TV and advertising in that it's a lot of good looking people in the businesses. And back in the day, I think when we were both doing our thing, people dated each other in the business because you spent so much time at work. You were around attractive people. It was a fun business and nobody really thought too much about it. Nowadays, it's a whole different ballgame. I talk to my friends who are still in advertising and stuff, and it's like nobody's dating anybody, and it's strictly business. And even the ad business, it's all digital now. It's a very different creature, if you will. What do you think about how life was then, and was it better then, or is it better without all of the shenanigans and the inner office dating?
It's not just the shenanigans. I think it's also highly irresponsible in an age when casual dating could be a death sentence. So there's that aspect too. Because when I was young and frisky, we didn't have to worry about communicable diseases as much as people do now. You could get a shot and everything would be fine. Thankfully, I never needed a shot, so we're good with that. It was a fun time, and there weren't any restrictions on dating each other at NBC. And not only did I date a few people, but there were a few people that actually got married and had children and lived happily ever after. So I think it's a matter of character on if you're going to date somebody. And certainly there was one guy I dated, and I was really crazy about this guy. And I was going through my, I am woman, hear me roar. I'm a feminist. I can date anybody I want to. And I was really falling for this guy, and I was kind of surprised about it. We worked in very close proximity to each other. And when the relationship didn't work out, I still had to see him every day at work.
Right.
And I did it in such a way where I might have come off as being the word that rhymes with witch. So I didn't exactly end the relationship in a very nice way, but he didn't either. And you'll have to, it's funny, it's in the book, but you'll have to hear about it. But I've told my husband about the story too, and he's actually met the guy before, and he looks at me like, you dated him?
One of the funniest passages in the book, and there's so many, is like there was a gentleman, I believe his name is Travis, and you guys kind of were having your own business, and then he used to bring it was the height of bro culture, it seemed like. He'd just have all his buddies pile into his place, whether you were there or not, and regardless of what you guys were doing. And he asked you one time to go out and get French fries for everybody, like $20 worth of French fries for all his homies, if you will. And it just seemed like,
well, he didn't ask me to get French fries. Let me. Okay. He just held a $20 bill over his head and said, "Could you get us something at McDonald's?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah, I'll get you something, Mister. Oh yeah." And carrying $20 worth of McDonald's French fries in 1976. Was a lot of French fries. And I walked back into the house and all the guys were sitting there watching the Lakers, and I dumped the French fries all over the guys. And I turned to Travis and I said, "Never call me again." Of course, I saw him at work the next day, and he came up to me a couple days later, and he just smiled, and he reached in his pocket and he pulled out some silver earrings, and he goes, "You left these at my house." And I went, "Those aren't my earrings."
Awesome.
And I've delighted in telling my friends this story about, I call Travis French Fry Guy when I tell the story, and all of my female friends are like, "Yeah, you did it. Yeah, you showed him." And most of the men go, "Why did you do that? Why didn't you, you know?" I tried talking to him. Talk wasn't going to help. And then, and my husband, when I told him the story, just said, well, did you have ketchup with the french fries?
Exactly. I hear you. So awesome. Now, you dealt with, you know, part of the star perks is limos and limos to and from the show. And you sometimes got limo duty. That was pretty funny. Tell us some stories about that, Shelley.
Oh, it was like going on a grown-up field trip. Oh, my gosh. It was so fun just to get out of working just at NBC doing the tours and ushering the shows. I had so many wonderful celebrities in the limos. And I remember there was an actor, Gil Gerard, who was Buck Rogers.
Right.
And the limo had just got a phone in it. And he was, can I call my parents? Can I call people? You know, it was fun that way. Most of the time I had to sit in the front seat because I would get car sick in the limo. So, and then sometimes there's like one guy that said, could we stop by Jack's house on Mulholland? He was interested in getting some illegal substances to take on the plane with him. And I wasn't going to let that happen. Not on my watch. It wasn't going to happen. And then there's some of the pages who they had this one guy for the Rose Parade, and he had stayed up all night partying for New Year's Eve and had vomited all over the inside of the limo. There was those things. There was there was a time. I don't. Do you want me to mention the Gilda story with a limo? Gilda Radner?
Sure.
This didn't happen to me. This happened to my friend Pete Hammond and Linda Levinson Taylor and Melissa Hunt. They escorted Gilda Radner to a press event. And she at the time was the number one star on the NBC network. And she finished her round of doing the tours. And she turned to Pete and said, I have 4 hours before I have to get in the limo and go back, get on my plane to go to New York. I've never been to Hollywood. Show me Hollywood. So Pete and Linda and Melissa hopped in Pete's Mustang and they drove all over Hollywood. Gilda put her hands and footprints at the Chinese Theater. She'd never had falafels. They got her falafels. They got Stan's Donuts in Westwood. She was dating a guy at the time whose parents lived in the Fairfax district, and she went to meet them. And Pete's like, oh, I'm nervous about getting her back to the plane and the limo on time. And sure enough, his car ran out of gas. So Pete, being the gentleman that he is, he sat in the car and steered it while Gilda and the other two girls pushed the car. And the irony was it was right in front of CBS when all of this happened. So they quick gassed up the car, got her back to the limo, and Pete got in the car with her and got her to the airport on time.
Amazing, amazing story. Now, you also worked on a lot of game shows. You seem to have a skill set and affinity for game shows, and you worked with some really talented people like Chuck Barris. Tell us about your experience with game shows and working with somebody as brilliant and as quirky as Chuck Barris.
I adored Chuck Barris. I actually knew him and a couple of the people on the staff before I got the job at NBC. Because in 1972 and 1973, I was a contestant on The Dating Game. And I had a chance to kind of see how things were backstage at a production company. And Chuck and the boys would have me come in and do game show run-throughs so they could test different game show concepts. And I really liked that, the playing games and watching these brilliant minds find just the right thing to make their show special to sell to the networks. So that when I got to NBC and Chuck and the boys were there, it was like, hi, everybody, you know, let's go have fun. And one time when I was on a tour, and there's a picture of it in the book, I was just minding my own business, giving a tour, and somebody grabbed me and said, quick, Chuck needs you. So I was, oh, okay, yeah. And they brought me backstage and Chuck said, stand here with these girls. When the curtain opens, walk out, you'll know what to do when you get there. And I'm like, humana, 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 humana. I don't know what to do. So we walk out to the theme music. And I was standing with other women who worked in different capacities at NBC, sound mixers, prop women, painters. And he said, these are the girls at NBC. Girls, I'd like you to introduce yourself. So we turned to each other and we shook each other's hands and we introduced ourselves to each other. So that was his opening bit that we used. So I had my 15 seconds of fame on the Gong Show because of Chuck.
Wow. And there was always the rumors. Was he in the CIA or not? What did you make of all of that, Shelley?
Isn't it fun that you're still asking that question all these years later? And that's the genius of Chuck.
Yep.
As it was with another person.
Andy Kaufman, right?
Andy Kaufman, yeah. All these years later, people still don't know. And I love that.
Yeah, that is brilliant. Now, this all leads up to you worked with Carson. What was it like working on a Tonight Show?
It was the best job in town. The people that came on the tour, of course, all wanted to see the Tonight Show. And most of the time they couldn't because those tickets were hard to get. Maybe if they were in town a little bit longer, they could wrangle some tickets. But the beginning part of the day, we could bring the tours into Studio One where they did the Tonight Show. And we could tell them all the specifics about, you know, how many seats and the band is here and this is and this is that. So some people got a little bit of that stardust on them from the Tonight Show. But then at 2 o'clock, the big doors would close and we couldn't allow the tours in there anymore. And that's when Doc and the band would rehearse the music for the evening. And we, as pages, if we weren't doing something else, we could go in and watch rehearsals. So we could see every big star in the world in their unguarded moments during these tech rehearsals. And then sometimes Johnny would even be rehearsing a sketch he might be doing that evening for, like, as Art Fearn or for the Tea Time matinee or another comedy bit with the Mighty Carson Art Players. And I always admired how, even though it was a casual atmosphere, Johnny was always very supportive of everybody that was there. He wanted things to go well, and he admired his writers. And he was never one of those people that showed up and was a slacker. He worked. That's another thing. People think that Johnny just worked for an hour a night. He was up first thing in the morning. He read several newspapers. He was talking to his writers saying, hey, why don't we try this, airline humor? Why don't we do Nixon humor? And he would give them ideas so that by the time he got to the studio at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, most of the jokes had already been written, and then he could just start putting them in the show and figuring out which joke goes where and which jokes don't work. Consummate professional. And with that said, he was out the door 10 minutes after the show was over.
Did he ever improvise? Or some folks have told me that everything was scripted on his show, everything. So is that true, or did he ad-lib at all?
Well, the opening monologue was not a verbatim monologue. It had key words on a cue card that would get him to the punchline. So those were his own words and his own beats and filling out the crowd of nearly 500 people a night that would be in the studio to hear the jokes. No, he was not scripted. I can safely say that. And even on the, like, Mighty Carson Art Players and some of that stuff, there was plenty of room for ad-libbing in there.
Okay. My special guest on Guys, Guys Radio is the amazing Shelley Herman. The name of the book is My Peacock Tale, Secrets of an NBC Page. Now, the arc of a page is usually around 18 months. Now, obviously, you catapulted from there. What happened? Did you feel like you were on the clock in that 18 months? Were you just taking more and more information in, making more and more contacts and connections? And did you have a path that led you from the page work to your further career?
Oh, I was definitely on the clock. And my clock, again, I don't break rules. I bend them a little bit. My clock got extended because during part of the time I was a page, I broke my leg. So I was assigned to work in the story department reading scripts. And that was a wonderful internship. I learned so much doing that. In fact, I know that a lot of your audiences like to hear things about career and how to do things. And I got one of my biggest career pointers working in the story department. Because I thought back in the day, if you want to get ahead in this world, you've got to learn shorthand, boy, and you have to sit in and take notes in writers' meetings and stuff. And I couldn't do it. My brain just wouldn't do it. And I was just in tears. And a woman from the story department came over to me, Janet Greek, and she said to me, and I quote, "If you don't want to do something for a living, don't learn how to do it."
I love that.
And that freed me up so much because I realized, well, all these other men who were doing these jobs, they don't know shorthand. Why was it incumbent upon me to learn? So my page time was extended because I had that little blip in my career. Now, nowadays, let me back up too. If somebody's interested in becoming a page, there's about 16,000 applications that are received each year. And they ask you now to send a 2-minute video in along with your resume. Then if they are interested, they'll talk to you on the phone. And then the next level is they will fly you either to New York or Los Angeles to meet in person with them. And they'll pay for that, which I think is wonderful because there's so many people that don't have the financial means to get this kind of an opportunity. So I really applaud NBC for doing that. And you have 12 to 18 months to hopefully make the contacts you need to make so that you can pursue a career or realize, I'm out of here. This showbiz stuff ain't for me. You know, you're under no contract to stay with NBC once those 18 months are up.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you took to it like a duck to water and you really made the most of it. How did you, when you got an assignment, like read some scripts, did you have any background in storytelling in terms of, you know, knowing what does the main character want? Why can't he or she get it? The escalating conflicts, all that standard stuff? Or did you just read it and say, hey, this works for me? If it doesn't, what was your, did you just like plow into it and say, I can do it?
Well, I always plow into everything and say, I can do it.
I can tell that. I can tell that, Shelley.
And much like Lucy Ricardo, I figured out somehow. No, when I was in the story department specifically, the main thrust of what they were interested in is the lead character somebody can the viewer would be able to relate to or is identifiable in some respect. So that was what we were going on as. If it's something that the viewing audience would embrace that character, identify with them somehow. And that was the only criteria. I'm pretty good about, I still am a big movie nut, a big TV nut. And that's why my game show brain is so active is because I know a lot of trivia. So without knowing, I knew structure. I knew how to tell a good story. And I could see where a plot point was shoehorned in someplace that didn't make sense, or if there was a red herring that just didn't pay off somehow. So it's an instinctual as well as some direction.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've written over 1,000 hours of TV work. What type of stuff did you work on? What did you enjoy working on most?
Gosh, I'm a game show geek. I do like game shows, and people say, well, who game shows? They have writers on game shows? yeah, because Ken Jennings and Mayim Bialik don't make up all those words, and they don't make up the clever way of giving the clues out to people. And any game show that you're watching, whether it's Weakest Link or even something, you know, really lighthearted like Supermarket Sweep or something like that, There is a drama to each of those shows, and there's questions that are written, there's dialogue for the hosts, and it builds to a certain point so that by the time that 30 minutes is over, you've had hopefully a little bit of a emotional roller coaster and a little cathartic experience when it's done. Very well planned.
Amazing. What do you think of all the cooking competition shows? They seem to be so popular. I'm addicted to Beat Bobby Flay. I met him. He's exactly like he is on the show. He's fun. And I find the shows very entertaining with a little edge to it.
Well, I'll tell you, Mark Summers, who was a host of many game shows, most remembered for Double Dare, I worked for him once on a food show. He had done the Unwrapped shows about, ever wonder how a Tootsie Roll is made? And so I interviewed with him, and I went in for the interview, and I said, by the way, they gave you the wrong information about Heinz ketchup when they said that it comes out at 12 miles an hour from the bottle, because that's incorrect information, because I was going to steal that question to use it on Supermarket Sweep. And it's actually, and I just, blah, 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 and he hired me because he knew I was a foodie and that I wouldn't make him look bad.
Amazing. So tell us about some of the shows you worked on and a couple of funny stories if you have some.
Oh, gosh.
I remember Supermarket Sweep. That was, you had a timer and you had to go through with your cart and through the aisles and grab stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, there's certain shows like a Supermarket Sweep show where you want people to guess the answers. You want them to build up the time so they can run through the supermarket, because that's the big thing on the show, is the hunting and gathering of that last portion of the show. We would have people that would hurt themselves because they'd get overly zealous. Oh, here's something. This is a little secret. when they would go to the meat counter where they would have the hams and the turkeys and the chickens and things like that, all of those were fake food. Why, you ask? Because when they first did the show in the 60s, when ladies were like wearing high heels and dresses and running around with their shopping carts, they would pick up the meat or the turkeys and things, and they would get the juices all over their clothes, and it would get smelly and icky. So they realized if they had synthetic food in those sections, but everything else in the supermarket was real.
And it's amazing, because I guess Guy's Grocery Games uses kind of the same template in a way. So the ideas get recycled. What do you think of the...
Well, he uses elements of several shows there, right? Because he's got the shopping cart, right? But then he uses elements of other shows about mixing unusual ingredients together with a timed element to it and judging. So I would say there's probably four different concepts of shows in there that make up that show.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Why do you think that some of these shows like Price is Right have been Jeopardy, obviously? I think Jeopardy, it's obvious because it's mental. It's one of the most challenging one that anybody can relate to. But things like Price is Right, which is kind of silly. What's the magic there? I mean, how come is that still on the air?
Nostalgic, comfort food, habit viewing. Nothing wrong with that. And if somebody remembers watching it with their grandma or when they were homesick from school and they enjoy watching it now, that's great. Plus, Price is Right keeps reinventing the games. It's never stale. And when they bring a game out, people are excited to see it because it hasn't been overused on the show. I think Drew Carey is an excellent host. He genuinely cares about the people. The show isn't about him. It's about the contestants. And that's a big difference too. I think Wayne Brady does a great job too, because even though he can put his, you know, he can sing his songs and do his improv, it's about the contestants. And I think for Wheel and Jeopardy, again, habit viewing, but two totally different concepts. Jeopardy, I think people like it if they get one or two answers a night when they're watching it and they feel good. Wheel of Fortune, I think, is a little more accessible to people.
So after working on game shows, tell us about how your career unfolded from there.
Well, I continue to work in game shows. That will always be something for me. Okay. But I've written quite a few other like talk shows. And again, who needs a writer on a talk show? You need to like give everybody like four or five questions asked and answered by you as the segment producer backstage, so that hopefully the host looks like they know what they're doing. I've written TV pilots. I've performed. Again, how do people get into show business? I had no intention of being on camera. I applied for a job as a writer for a show called Off the Wall. And I was performing in an improv comedy group because people said, get into improv comedy. It'll help your writing and it'll help you so that you won't be intimidated speaking to people in a job situation. So that sounded great to me. So applied for the job with Off the Wall. I said, come down and see my improv group. And they said, we like you as a writer and we want you on camera.
That's fantastic. Well, you have that magic personality, so that's a great thing.
Oh, now,
also,
you.
I want to ask you about writing jokes, because you mentioned Joan Rivers in your book, and a buddy of mine, Brad Zimmerman, he's got a one-man show, but he opened for Joan Rivers for many years. And he used to, his description was very similar to yours in the book. And she would pay for jokes, not that much. And I guess the question is, how do you write a joke? What's the template for a joke? Or is there one?
There's that old thing about tragedy plus time equals comedy.
Okay.
And I think you have to, if you're writing for somebody like Joan, you have to know her sensibilities. She's not going to do a joke about playing baseball. That wouldn't have been a joke for her unless it was, you know, somehow morphed into something in her wheelhouse somehow. But you have to, with all kinds of writing, when you're writing for a character, you have to know who that character is and how they feel. So once you know that, it becomes organic. And there's different types of humor. There's observational humor that somebody could do. There is a set of punchline kind of jokey joke kind of thing. But most of the time, if you're trying to write a joke, you can't write a joke. If you just let it happen. And if you see somebody who you might comment, if they look tacky, that would have been something Joan Rivers would have liked. If it was, you mentioned Gary Shandling earlier. If it was something where you saw somebody in an awkward position, that would be a joke that Gary might like. Mm-hmm. And the other thing too is try them out on your friends.
Yep.
You know,
what do you think of today's comics, particular? I guess the hottest one is Sebastian Maniscalco, and he embodies the jokes very well. He really has great body language. What are your thoughts on him and some of the other big acts out there nowadays?
I'm finding more of the acts that seem to be appealing to a wide range of people are storytellers. They're not looking to tell jokes. They want you to feel, and they want to say, I'm going to take you on a ride now. Here's a story. Come along with me. And I also find that whatever jokes are offensive or Me Too jokes, you can still do those in the right context. A comic should never be afraid to say anything. But if what you're saying is offensive, then it's not a joke anyway. I hearken back to like Don Rickles. And people go, Don Rickles could never do his act now. I disagree. I think we need Don Rickles now more than ever.
Yep.
Because what he showed was the absurdity of people having these negative stereotypes about people. And by taking on everybody in the room, being a bulldog about all of that stuff to the point that everybody's laughing at each other, everybody's hysterical. And then Rickles, you know, dropped the mic, you know, guys, we're all the same.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a great point. It's interesting also with comedy that a lot of people say that comedy is based on an attack. It's what do you think about that? That it's really aggression. If you listen to some comics, that seems to be true. Other comics, not so much.
I don't think it's always an attack. It can be. I've listened to many comics, men and women, who are just observational and just don't understand why something happens, and they tell you why. It's not an indictment of anything. It's just, You know, like Jerry Seinfeld, his innocuous thing about, you know, why is there always a sock missing from the dryer? You know, that's not an attack. It's an observation. And we can all identify with it.
Yep, that's true. And speaking of his show, I think it's fascinating because some of the comics on there, I mean, he's top of the game still. And he puts the guests, I like this, on the spot where they have to deliver. And some of them are very, very funny. And some of them aren't very funny in conversation. What are your thoughts on that? Are all comics funny?
No, and I don't know that it's incumbent to always be funny. I think it's incumbent to be Like, it's like looking at a painting. Somebody might think the painting's ugly. Somebody might think the painting is beautiful, but it elicits a response. Mm-hmm. So you can't say Andy Kaufman was funny all the time, but you couldn't take your eyes off of him.
Exactly. Exactly. So you've been interviewed a lot and you've interviewed a lot of people. What would you like to be asked as a guest?
To be Mrs. Kevin Klein, but I don't know that that's going to happen. I think what I'd like to be asked is, how much can we pay you to make a TV series out of your book? That's now, the thought that's on my mind right now.
It would be a fun series, and it would capture a specific time where there was more innocence and more, you know, devil may care attitude in the world. I think it would be terrific. So what are your steps in terms of shopping your book to be a show?
Well, I can only hope that the writer's strike ends quickly, and that the Screen Actors Guild is also able to come to terms quickly with their needs. It's not unreasonable what both of these unions are asking for. I remember standing in a ballroom at the Hollywood Palladium Hotel, and the people were saying from the Writers Guild, we've got to give these producers a chance. There's this new thing called HBO, and we've got to lower our fees so that we can try to help this burgeoning new form of entertainment come to pass. And we never, ever recovered from that. And since then, not only have the fees been lower for writing scripts, the residuals, which is what carries writers through till their next project, that base has been all but eliminated from these services. Foreign residuals aren't what they used to be. And the same goes for actors, where actors and writers both aren't able to make their minimums for their pensions and for their health insurance. So now this starts affecting families and children. So it's not just a bunch of rich people, you know, sitting around drinking martinis. So when all this is over and everybody's happy, I plan to shop the book around and see if somebody wants to do a TV show out of it. Think like Mad Men versus Sex and the City in the 70s. That's kind of what the vibe is.
It's a lot of fun. I think it's going to happen. And thank you so much for being my special guest on Guys Guys Radio. Last question for you for our audience. What's your best piece of advice for people who want to enter the television industry?
My best piece of advice is to listen. And after you listen, ask, what would Lucy Ricardo do? Figure out a way to get in.
Yep. Got it. Love it. Shelley Herman, my special guest. Again, the book is My Peacock Tale, Secrets of an NBC Page. Great to meet you. Best of luck with the book and hopefully the series. And hopefully we'll talk again at some point.
I look forward to it.
Thank you.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
It's Guys Guy Radio.
Okay, what a terrific conversation with a real pro in the TV business, Shelley Herman. Shelley has been on the trail of the TV career path for many years and has made it. And the insights that she shared with us today are super helpful. And she has a lot of fun stories and anecdotes. Again, the name of her book is My Peacock Tale, Secrets of an NBC Page. So if you're interested in becoming a page as a way into the business, or just learning about the TV business, how it works, and about game shows, and also some of the talk shows. She worked with Johnny Carson, amongst others. Shelley's got the goods, and she's got a lot of great insights, as she shared some of them with us today. And there's a tremendous amount of anecdotes and famous people, little tidbits about them and her and her colleagues' experiences with them in the world of television, kind of behind-the-scenes look. So what did we learn from Shelley about the TV business and breaking in? I think, as Shelley mentioned, the key attributes for breaking into TV is the same as anything else. And I know this was the same for me in advertising. You've got to listen. You've got to look for your opportunities. You've got to ask for the order. You've got to be aware of your surroundings. You've got to think quick. And you have to be of service. You have to add value and have a creative mind and be curious. And Shelley lays it all out in her book, and also, I think, shared some terrific tips about breaking into the business and what it takes from a personal characteristic standpoint, and just, you know, being there and being having your antenna up when those opportunities show up, to be ready to jump on them. So I'm also writing a series now on aging. It's called Aging is a Choice, and I'm writing for UK Health Triangle Magazine. It's the digital arm of UK Health Radio, Health Triangle Magazine. So I'm writing a series about aging is a choice and all of the kind of decision points I've faced in my own personal life and how I'm doing my very best to glean information and share about longevity and living quality years. Because as a boomer, it's all about longevity now. We want to stay healthy. I've got a 10-year-old son. I've got my wife is younger than me, and I want to stay vital and healthy. And I've faced some of the challenges that lots of us have faced out there in terms of health stuff. And I've managed each step of the way to keep going, keep on keeping on. And I hope you will too. And I hope I can share some insights there. So Guys, Guys Radio, we're here every week. We've got a ton of great guests coming up that I can't wait to get to. And until then, I'm going to be back next week. I'll see you then. And like I always like to say, guys, guys, finish first.